Hello, and welcome to Technically Baltimore's The Look Ahead. I'm Dante Kirby, reporter with Technically, and in this series, we're exploring the theme of the new normal and discussing the lessons we've learned in 2020. And today, my guest is Jonathan Moore, the CEO and founder of Rowdy Orbit, which is providing internet and digital infrastructure to communities in Baltimore. And for those who don't know, can you talk a bit about the work that Rowdy Orbit has been doing for the community in the past few years?
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it this morning. What Rowdy Orbit has been involved in over the last couple of years now, it's Street Sounds of Baltimore City. really been focused on how do we get more people from low-income neighborhoods or in resource neighborhoods and technology? And it started with, getting into web series, and then from web series, training people with criminal backgrounds to learn code, and then eventually pivoting to where we are now. And the goal was to not really look at this as a way of diversifying the industry, but it's giving communities who understand what culture is all about, once they have a hold of technology, how would they transform their neighborhoods? And how would they civically solve their own issues from the ground up if they learn how to build, they learn the language? Because if you know the problem, maybe technology can help to provide a solution.
And I guess, could you talk a bit more about like that transition from the early days of a lot of your work being around recidivism and reskilling jobs in the tech field to like what it's doing now of like community organizing and internet connectivity? There's still training in the tech field, but with the focus on internet connectivity and broadband infrastructure. Can you talk about what spurred that change in like focus?
Yeah, I mean, what spurred it was just people across the table aren't going to hire somebody that doesn't look like them. They're not going to hire a Tavon or Davon or Shaniqua. If they look like they come from a certain neighborhood, it's just not going to happen. You know, people will talk about it, but actually moving into action is not going to happen. And so I said, well, there's got to be a way, instead of going through all this blah, blah, blah conversation about bringing people on, how do we just manufacture an opportunity where a community can just hire their own, you know? And so around the same time where I started questioning, how long I want to do this, that's when I really discovered, that in a lot of areas that there's just no internet, flat out. There are a lot of dishes, but they aren't connected, but people just don't have access and it's not affordable. And so I've been doing the work around the digital divide since 2010. When FCC Commissioner Kleinberg was using us as a term, when she coined the term digital divide. And so it was really out of frustration. And I said, well, if community can hire their own on their own terms, now it changes the hiring practices and decisions and the makeup, where the makeup of community can really look like, work on cooperative can really look like members from the neighborhood. And so now they become the subject matter experts that can deliver messages around broadband, digital literacy, but they can do it in their own language, because it's, I think that a lot of things that happen is that we don't see the value in the people that live in the community unless they're delivering something for another organization, but not for themselves, and really pushing sovereignty. And so, this was a way of just doing it. And around the same time, I was learning on how to become a community organizer over at John Hopkins Bunting Neighborhood Leadership Program over at the Urban Health Institute. And it made just a lot of sense. It's like, well, community organizing, this fits exactly what we're doing. It's community driven. It's how do you organize people? How do you organize power? How do you organize solution? And how do you make sure that people, you leave a better footprint than what you take when you don't take so much out of the neighborhood. It's how do we give more? And so it just was perfect sense. And it just helped to change my whole thought process and really start thinking about people as people rather than people as units.
And I guess, could you talk a bit more about that importance of like a local community having a stake in their broadband infrastructure and elaborate more on even on the concept of like what you're trying to do, where you create this broadband infrastructure. And at a start, it's for profit, but eventually it leads to the community owning the infrastructure in a way that like really kind of disrupts the idea of what it is to be an internet service provider.
Yeah, it's vitally important that people own local ownership. So that way, one, we take transportation as a barrier off the table. You no longer have to take two buses to get to work, and you can work where you live. Now, if you work where you live and you have more time to walk your kids or your nieces and nephews to school, you know, how does that change the dynamics of the conversations that you have? Now, when you learn about this new language in the technology industry and radio frequency, RF frequencies, and everything that's related to that, well, then from your point A to point B of walking around your neighborhood, people are going to start asking you questions. Now, you could disseminate that information in a language that suits you best. And so what we're doing, we're leveraging people to be local assets. And a lot of people that live in these neighborhoods, there's generations living in these neighborhoods. And it's like, okay, well, then we should really tap into that, you know, because in the end, now, if they can own it, how are they going to circulate their dollars back into their community? You know, and now that they have, now they understand that they got this resource, how would he begin to advocate on their own behalf? And how would he begin to inspire others to be able to utilize this utility, you know, to build things, to really solve their own problems on their own terms? And what I'm really excited about is that now when people start to own it and it becomes theirs, how are they going to evolve it based on where they see their needs and just grow it? I mean, because like I said, this is a community of culture. You know, you give people something, they're going to take it to another level. I'm excited to see where is it going to go beyond what we thought, because I think it's going to be 10 to 20 times better, but I have no idea what it's going to look like. But I'm excited to see the future.
And I guess to continue on that future conversation, I guess, what's one way you're excited to see the conversation on digital equity go in the future?
That it evolves, that it's not always rooted in digital equity. You know, it's like, okay, let's start talking about digital dignity. Let's start talking about compensation, data compensation. Let's start talking about data as a public health, data as a social, well, around broadband technology, data as a social determinant of health. You know, a new terminology that came out of this whole, everything that happened with COVID was digital poverty. You know, it's like, okay, well then, you know, where are the solutions to that? Yeah, we're well-versed in the problem. We can get money for the problem, but outside of connectivity, what are the solutions that are going to come from the ground up rather than the top down?
And I guess what's something about Baltimore that you feel makes it uniquely able to tackle these issues of digital equity and the digital divide and like digital inclusion?
Well, because Baltimore is the home of redlining. You know, we're great in the innovation of segregation. And so if we're great in segregation and redlining, how do we now, this newer generation and the individuals that are doing this work, how do we provide sound solutions that start to chip away at our history and start to turn that tide and just in one task or one solution at a time? And so I think that, you know, it's a lot of people don't understand that redlining started here in Baltimore because of public health, you know, and it became the model. And there are neighborhoods in the corporate charter where Black and brown people can still not buy, technically cannot buy homes, you know, or own property. Okay, well then if those things still exist, how do we use this as an opportunity to sway, to really turn the tide and really get away from that narrative altogether and start to make change where there's policy and legislation that will impact the next generation to make it a little bit easier for them?
And I guess the center back around to 2020, I guess, could you talk a bit about what is 2020 and this beginning half of 2021 taught you? I guess it's not the beginning half no more. It's like the beginning. It's 2021's almost over. Like it flew by.
That it's a lot of mixed emotions. As we get older, things haven't really changed. Things have just gotten worse, and they're subversively worse. And that, you know, in order to do this work, you have to have the emotional, physical, spiritual stamina to see, and intellectual stamina to see it through. And it just because we have Black legislators in place in power right now, and with the Obama administration, it doesn't mean that the work is not done. You know, January 6th was just atrocious. And it's just, you know, what I've learned for myself was just less social media, less news, to filter out the majority of the BS.
And I guess as we move forward into this like new normal of like the internet being essential and just like the heightened level of public health consciousness and even the way we're working is new and that people are starting to like really want to be able to choose where they work and how they work at like a different capacity. I guess, what do you see for the future of Baltimore, digital equity, and of course, Rowdy Orbit?
Just the whole aspect of sovereignty. You know, now that people are not taking jobs because to work umpteen hours a week, to me, I'm like, that's great. You know, people want their lives back. And instead of working themselves to death, you know, they want to be able to have a life, you know. And I think that around the word around sovereignty, I think that it's going to evolve over time. And I'd like to see that word be more adopted or more just like absorbed into low-income communities and really start to own what that means for them. And I think that, you know, for Baltimore, I think we'll hopefully get away from the whole ambiguous umbrella term of success. Because based on your socioeconomic background, that can mean something different for you. And we start looking at people as people and judging them on their own merit as far as they want to go, and be okay with that. And work really work with community to really solve problems from the ground up rather than the top down. And so I'd like to see a different level of solidarity where instead of community being last on the list, they're first on the list. And instead of people going in and parachuting in and bringing in resources, really asking, what do you need? You know, and not just asking community stakeholders, but the community about what do you really need? And how do we deliver that in a phased amount of time?
Yeah. So on that note, is there anything you feel we haven't talked about? Anything you feel people should know about, especially what Rowdy Orbit plans to do in the next, with the rest of the year and in 2022, or just where you envision Baltimore going in the next year or two?
Yeah, I still see Baltimore still taking its strides. We got a new administration, which is great. And just really figuring out what's the best pathway to move forward. And I think everyone's trying to figure that out on their own terms, but to make sure that there's a lot of communication so that a lot of us are all on the same page. Because I mean, everyone's dealing with the tangled mess of COVID, and the aftermath of COVID, and the Delta of COVID. And so we're all trying to make responsible strides, in areas where we can just stay in our lane. But realizing that at some point there's going to be an intersection, and by bringing us together, meeting an intersection, at some point, hopefully we'll make sweeping change. And where Rowdy Orbit's going is we're just really focused on hiring local residents, training them up. Most of them really don't know the language and taking our time and understand who they are as individuals, who's going to be right for the work on cooperative, because I think it's going to take more, like closer to 7 years to get a group of individuals to really run a work on cooperative throughout Baltimore City, and really invest in people. And I think that where we're going to be going is we're going to get smarter about the people we hire and smarter and more intelligent about the community we serve. And at some point, we're going to really make a hard push into public health and then find solutions and solve problems and work with local community to give them the resources to actually start to think about how do we think about community IP? Because now if community starts to own their own data, what does that do for the assets and how they negotiate with partners and relationships where they can actually partner with the city, state, and federal government? And that just drives revenue.
Yeah. I guess, could you break down that term, like community intellectual property, a bit for like somebody who like doesn't really even understand the concept of what that could be?
Yeah. So so some of the things that we're doing is we're doing IoT, Internet of Everything. And so we're putting up air quality sensors. I mean, we're putting up freeway hotspots on privately owned buildings. It's an opportunity for us to put up an air quality sensor. And in order to maintain an air quality sensor, we're going to have to train local residents on how to become data and community scientists. Now, once they become data and community scientists and they're collecting the data, well, guess who will own the data over time? It's the community. And so that becomes intellectual property of the community that's data driven. And so that's what we're looking at, is trying to find ways to use the internet to drive data so that the community can own that information. So now when someone wants that information, there's a price point that they have to negotiate with the community in order to use a data usage agreement or buy out that data altogether. And so what that will help to do over time is to really invert the relationship between the stakeholders that want this information and the provider that's providing this information. And so I'm excited to see where that's going to go and how communities can be able to use that information or their IP, intellectual property, to really begin to advocate on their own, but also what type of solutions will they come up with? And how is that going to help to transition the fabric within those neighborhoods when we start talking about vernacular on a regular basis? Because now people know the information that they have. Now, when they start talking about quantitative and quantitative data and then go deep and having those discussions and go to City Hall, go to the state and begin to advocate, it's no longer advocating. It's the information with the passion. And it's the scientific information with that community passion. Now, how are you going to refute the person, the individual is there and they're quoting their own data, and you know they're passionate about what they're saying? It becomes a different conversation and it becomes a different way of advocating. And I think that what we're going to start to see, it's going to probably take us about 2 years to get there from this point forward. What we're going to start to see is a different conversation where you have to account for communities and need spaces to have the scientific data because they want you to provide a sound solution, or they're bringing you a sound solution to fund.
Yeah. On that note, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. And that's been Technically Baltimore, so look ahead.